Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Hey, 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 good morning everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is the Brilliant Ideas Radio Show, and I am Brilliant Ideas, and welcome again to another fun-packed show on a Saturday morning for all of our foodie friends. We appreciate you joining us again on a Saturday morning, bright and shiny, well, at least bright and shiny over here in California. My sidekick this morning, Hank Bob / Aaron, will not be joining us, unfortunately. He has some issues, but we'll be back hopefully next week. And guess what? That means that our food news girl, that Jersey style girl, Laurie, she's going to be my sidekick this morning because I need someone to kick and throw under the bus. And if everything's working right this morning, I think I've got you. Good morning, Laurie, out there in New Jersey.
Good morning. And you may be
How
bigger than me, but you can't kick me under the bus.
You just better hang on tight because Aaron's not here, so somebody's going to take the sidekick positions, and that's you this morning. How's everything out there? How's in New Jersey?
Actually, it's a really pretty morning here, too. It's chilly, but the sun's shiny. It's blue sky, and I'm not going to complain. It's a really pretty day.
Well, good. It's actually cold and sunny here in California. We got down again into the upper 20s, and you know it's cold when the bird bath water is frozen, and it was this morning, so. Which
just
is weird.
Warm weather.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's weird in California to walk out there and you look at the bird bath and it's frozen. I'm like, what the heck? This is San Diego. It's not supposed to do that.
Come to the East Coast. It's like this a lot.
I bet. Well, I am an East Coast boy and grew up on the East Coast, and I'm used to that cold weather and all the humidity.
Oh, yes.
You can't beat California, though, I have to say. It's got great weather. But anyway, first of all,
yeah, you don't
have
a hair problem. See, you don't have a hair problem. You have straight hair, so you don't have, when it's humidity, you don't have a problem with that. Me? Oh, my gosh.
Well, actually, I do have a hair problem, but humidity won't help baldness, I don't think.
Oh, come on. You're not. You got good hair. No. Now you're picking on yourself. But I won't throw you under the bus.
So, first of all, I've got news for you. You always have food news. I have food news for you.
Uh-oh.
Well,
go ahead. Am I going to be a deer in headlights here?
No. You know how you always talk about the wine pick of the week?
Yes.
Well, I found my wine pick of the week. Now, it's way above my normal price point, as Brian says. I actually spent some big bucks for these. I got two wines. I spent big bucks for both of them. I spent $4.99 for the first one I'm telling you about. And actually, that was on sale. That was half. That was half price. But this is good stuff. First of all, I need to clarify something.
Okay.
I'm not a wine connoisseur, which I don't need to clarify that. Everybody knows that. But I've always thought Zinfandel was kind of a light wine. you know, the pink looking stuff that girls drink.
Yep. I know, rosé.
Well,
I know. A lot of people think that.
I know. Well, I found out that it's not. I met this lady at the Fresh and Easy supermarket, and she was raving about this wine. And in fact, she called me over. She said, "Hey, tall guy, I need your help. Can you grab those six bottles on top of the shelf because I can't reach them?" And so I said, "Yeah." So I grabbed all six. She goes, "This is the best wine you will ever drink." And so another lady walks up and she says, "Oh, I've heard about this wine." She goes, "Oh, you took the last six bottles." So the lady says, no, here, you have one of these." And then she says to the nice tall guy, "I'll give you one too. You need to take this wine home, and this will be your favorite wine, I guarantee it." So I thought, yeah, okay, $4.99, that's, you know, that's like 2.5 times what I usually pay for wine. But I brought it home, and it's called Lecino, L-E-C-C-I-N-O, 2011, Zinfandel. It's from Lodi, California area. It's old, fine Zinfandel, and it's dark, like my favorite wine, Shiraz. So
yes,
I was shocked.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah, when she said Zinfandel, I said, "That's a girl's wine." She goes, no, you need to take this home, and it's a dark wine. You'll like it. And I'm going to read the back of the bottle. I found the bottle. I threw it in recycle, but I found the bottle. I was digging it this morning. I was digging through the trash, and I think that bottle's in recycle, and I found it. So anyway, it's called Lecino Lodi Old Vines Infidel. And let me see. I got to put my glasses on so I can see here. Lecino Zinfandel grapes are hand-harvested from hand-trained vines from some of the oldest and most respected vineyards in the Zinfamous appellation of Lodi. But this stuff is, like, unbelievable. Okay, and I'm going to read what it says here. The delicious Zinfandel, and by the way, I'm reading this, but I agree 100% to what it says. This delicious Zinfandel makes a bold statement from the first sip. Rich flavors of plum, pepper, cola, and chocolate are naturally balanced from a variety of influences. The luscious combination provides a lingering and spicy finish characteristic of great Zinfandel. And this is where it's really cool, too. It says, serve at room temperature. And listen to this lineup. Who does this sound like? Enjoy with barbecue ribs, pizza, hearty soups, chili, pasta with rib-based sauces, and spicy sauces. Now, is that not my wine?
It was made for you. That is so you. Oh, my goodness.
It is.
It sounds
so everybody,
really good.
I'm not kidding. And Lecino Vineyards, wherever you are, if you're listening, if you're not listening, we're going to send you a copy of this radio show. But it's the best wine. You've got a new believer, and Great Ideas will promote Lecino wine. All you got to do, folks, is send me some free wine, and I'll I'll do a promotion for you. But it's excellent wine, Laurie.
I'm going to actually, it's funny, after the show, I'm going to head over to the liquor store, and I'm going to look for it. I'm going to see if they have it.
All right, here's another one you told me about. It's called Zen of Zen.
Yes.
And I had that one, too. I dug that one out of the recycle. You know, there's a lot of bottles, a lot of wine bottles in the recycle, but it's a 2010 Old Vines Zinfandel, and it's also excellent. I would say not as good as a Lecino, in my opinion, but actually very good, too. And it's, let's see, where they grow this. Geyserville, California. It's called Zen of Zen, and I guess that's the name of the winery. Yeah, Zen of Zen Winery, but it's also very good. It says it has chocolate, toffee, and blackberry plum flavors, and, blackberry jam. Also good with hearty foods, pork, roast chicken, and chocolate, and prime rib. So those two wines are my favorite wines right there. Lecino's my number one, and Zen of Zen is number two. Okay, that's the end of my food news.
Okay, so now you're not going to be a Shiraz guy anymore. You're a Zen.
Well, I do like Shiraz and Syrah, but I'm shocked. I mean, I guess I'm stupid when it comes to wines, but I never knew there was a dark Zinfandel until the lady brought it to my attention at the Fresh and Easy store. So lady out there in the Fresh and Easy store. Thank you.
Yeah, but remember a while back, it's so funny because you probably never, we were on a different wavelength with me and you. Because a while back I would say, I kept saying, you would love Zins. You would love Zins. You're like, oh, I'm not going to like a Zin. I don't like Zins. But I was thinking you knew that they were the dark, not the,
oh,
you know,
no.
not the blush. And now.
You can't assume anything that I know anything, Laurie.
What's that, Venus and Mars?
Don't assume I know anything, all right?
See? Good. I'm going to definitely go buy that, though, and I'll have to call you and tell you what I think. Because it sounds like my style.
Right. It is excellent. So now, I've done the wine part of the food news. Now it's time for you to tell us some interesting foodie news.
Okay. Here we go. First, are you a gum chewer?
A who?
A gum chewer? Like, do you chew gum? Do you like to chew gum?
Oh, a gum chewer.
What do you think I'm saying, gum?
I had no clue. I thought you were speaking like some kind of language Zimbabwe. A gum chewer. Yes, I am a gum chewer.
Oh, well, me too. But what about bubble gum?
Well, I haven't had bubble gum in a long time. But as a kid, my grandfather had a gas station, and he used to give us, what was that called, Double Bubble and Bazooka bubble gum back in the day.
Yeah. I used to have the bazooka. I haven't had bazooka gum, and I couldn't tell you when, the longest time. But anyway, I found this fun article, and I thought I would read it. It says, no one is more accustomed to bubbles bursting than marketers of bubble gum, but even they have been surprised by recent sales declines. It says, domestic sales of bubble gum are projected to total 206.9 million in 2012, a drop of 38%. Bazooka bubble gum, which was introduced in 1947, it's been around a really long time, fell even more, a drop of 48%. So Bazooka has overhauled its logo and packaging.
Oh, Bazooka Joe.
Bazooka Joe, yeah. So it says, gone is the red, white, and blue color scheme and geometric design of the brand, replaced with more saturated hues like fuchsia and yellow, and with the splatted paint look of graffiti. It will begin appearing in stores this January. I'm going to actually look forward to see if I notice something different on it. You
know, are they going to still have the comic strip, Bazooka Joe comic strip?
Brilliant. I don't know.
I'm sorry. If you read the article, the answer is yes, but online, not in the packaging. I thought maybe you had read the article before you started the show.
I did read the article. I read a whole bunch of articles. I don't remember everything it said. I have to continue to answer that question.
All right. You'll be able to answer my question as you read further.
It says, a Manhattan branding and design firm reviewed the new Bazooka design and said it takes visual cues from comic books, skateboard culture, and graffiti, and that it feels right for today. So it says, I wonder if they couldn't have taken more from what they had and re-energized it to make it look cool, like the Juicy Fruit model and Hershey's model, referring to the gum brand and chocolate bar that have tweaked their looks over the years. You know what? I didn't realize that Hershey tweaked its look. It looks, all I know is I see the word Hershey's, and I don't even pay attention. I just grab it.
Well, that's the thing with me. I mean, and, you know, Hershey's does jump out, too. When you see it, that white printing on that dark packaging,
yeah.
It does jump right out. You're right.
Well, I always buy the dark. So, but, yeah, you can't miss Hershey's. So it says, I think this is a little bit of an overreach because they have had equity and authenticity in their original design. I agree with that. You know, they took something that was really good, but I guess, you know, these marketing guys got to make a...
Yeah, but if the sales of bubblegum is down, I guess they're trying to figure out a way to make it go up. You know, bubblegum used to be cool, but I guess it's not cool anymore.
Yeah, I guess, I like the dentine ice. That's what I chew. Like, I'm a gum chewer. I'm pretty bad. I have gum all the time in my mouth, so. But it says
fact,
here...
I'm looking on my desk here. Oh, I like the extra. I was saying, I just bought some gum. Yeah, the extra winter fresh and peppermint is good. Peppermint makes me sneeze, though, every time I chew that gum.
You've got to try. I've had that before, but you got to try the dentine ice. It just feels like it's delicious. Anyway, it says, Bazooka has struggled to get shelf space in the last decade, said the bold approach was winning over retailers. Target, 7-Eleven, and Kroger will begin stocking it early in 2013. So maybe they're going to be okay. Bazooka is pitched to children from 10 to 13, according to the brand. It says the brand, which said it had not advertised in more than 5 years, also will embark on a television and online advertising campaign. It looks like you will be seeing commercials appearing in March. And then it also says here, what adults may remember best about Bazooka is what you said in the beginning, is also going to be disappearing. It's the mascot, Bazooka Joe. He has been wrapped around the gum since 1953. It's all about doing one thing really well, and that is refreshing the Bazooka brand. So bye-bye. Bye-bye, Bazooka
Joe. Yeah, but keep reading.
That's it. What? Do you know more than I do?
Well, I guess I do. I thought it said, actually, I read an article online about it a couple weeks ago, but they're going to still have Bazooka Joe on their website, and they're going to have products that have Bazooka Joe, like, I don't know, dolls and toys and stuff,
oh,
but
really?
You have to go online to get it, yeah. They won't have, not have the comic strip anymore inside the gum.
See? Okay. So you knew that. I didn't even know that. But
yes,
you tried to test me. You threw me under the bus. You're in big trouble.
Man, well, yeah, I got to be up on these things. Now we have a food show.
That'll have a food fight. Okay. Here's one for you.
I didn't mean to pop your bubble, by the way. Okay, go ahead. What?
Unbelievable. It says, will it work? With a question mark. I'm dying to hear your opinion on this one. Starbucks bets $1 reusable cup will be cheap enough to prod its customers to kick the disposable habit. Others doubt the low price will be enough to change behavior. Now, what do you
okay,
do
can you stop right there? I heard this story on national news the other day, and it's been written up in just about every single USA Today to you name it newspaper. This is the dumbest idea I have ever heard. This is definitely not a brilliant idea. And by the way, I'm sorry, Starbucks, but what are you thinking? Go ahead, read your story, but this to me has got to be the dumbest idea they've ever thought of.
Well, it's funny. After I have my opinion. After I read the article, I was thinking, you know, whenever we go to Trader Joe's, me, my family, my sisters, we're online and we're like, darn, we forgot the bags. We have the bags, we bought them, and then we forget to bring them in. They're still in the car. We're not running out to the car to go get our bags. We're online and we just – so even with a big bag we forget, let alone you're going to remember a reusable bag.
Oh, I know. I mean, I'm sorry, folks. Anybody out there who is an environmental wing-wang freak, I'm sorry, but we're pushing this way too far, in my opinion. You know, you got to go to the grocery store. And now you got to take your own bag or pay for your bag. Now we're going to be reusing our cups for coffee. Crazy. Stupid.
You know, before I even continue, I have a brilliant idea. How we can get Starbucks to make money. Okay. I say maybe you should offer Starbucks your reusable cup, tell them not to wash it, and then they can have girls sit on it.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. Get, here you go, girls. I'll put it on eBay. You can get
exactly.
Starbucks cup with my saliva all over it.
With your lips on it. Didn't Whitney Spears do that with gum? I'm just thinking, didn't she do something like that with gum one time? She made a lot of
I don't know. This is the dumbest idea I ever heard.
Well, for people who haven't been listening, I'll just briefly give you what it says here. It says, coffee giant Starbucks will begin selling a $1 reusable cup resembling its paper version at all its company-owned stores in the U.S. and Canada in an effort to get customers to kick their throwaway habit.
Oh,
amid public pressure to curb trash from disposable cups, Starbucks is rolling out a novel possible solution. The Seattle-based coffee giant will start selling the plastic cups bearing its logo and resembling the paper version at all its company-owned stores, in a bid to get customers. I just read that. What the heck is this? Did this thing copy
itself? You repeated yourself twice, but you made the point. Here's the part I don't get. Do they understand how unsanitary this whole project, how unsanitary it could be? See, I'm big in food processing and all that, and dealing with foodborne illnesses and that kind of thing. This is, okay, let me give you an example. Grillion goes to Starbucks, okay, and he gets a frappa chapa, whatever, cappuccino, and takes it home, puts it in my car and drives home and drinks the coffee, and I leave the cup in the car, okay? And then the next morning I get in my car and I'm going back out and I'm like, oh, darn it, I forgot to wash my cup.
Yep.
Now, am I going to get out of the car, go in the house and sanitize my cup? No, I'm going to drive back to Starbucks. I'm going to hand the nasty cup that's been sitting in my truck for 24 hours with bacteria growing on it, hand it to the girl behind the counter and say, okay, I want another frappa cappuccino, and she's going to give me the same thing again. And this is a routine I can see happening over and over again. It's got to be the most unsanitary thing that they've ever thought of.
Well, that's what they're saying. See, the thing is, Starbucks will clean it in boiling hot water for you. But then the people who are working at Starbucks are taking your cup. Like, say you have a cold or you're not feeling well, and then they're touching that. And then I'll skip the rest of it because you kind of did the whole thing for me. You summed it up in one line.
Sorry.
But the last line does say, no, it's really good because it's true. And I was thinking the same thing. It says, the last line says, others are skeptical. A bigger factor is human behavior. I have friends who are environmentalists, and they have trouble remembering their own mug, says Conrad McCarron of As You Sow, a nonprofit group advocating corporate social responsibility. We're so used to this disposable culture. Some retailers have cited concerns that reusing cups could cause cross-contamination of germs. There's this fear of liability. And I agree about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Duh.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, they're going to give you 10 cents off. That's the other thing. It costs $1 for the cup, right?
Yes.
So they're going to give you 10 cents off your cappuccino, frappuccino, whatever, you know, and then they're going, then you have to bring that cup in 10 times to get your money back. Okay, whatever. For all those wing-wangs out there who want to do it, knock yourself out. I'm not.
Well, it says it will give a dime discount for each refill, so the cup pays for itself after 10 uses. Well, I don't, hey.
Oh, well.
Who knows? What do we know?
Oh well. We're all eco-friendly here.
Yeah, but this one I totally agree with what they're saying as far as, you know, contamination and there could be liability. So we'll see what happens. I like this article a lot. This one says, "Made in the USA seems to resonate well beyond the USA." Yay. Consumers in China are willing to pay a premium for certain products labeled made in the USA, because they see them as more durable and of higher quality, a new study found. Yep.
Which they are.
I know. The report found 61% of Chinese consumers would pay more for a product made in the United States, and when products are of similar price or quality, about 47% prefer the U.S.-made alternative, more than double the number who would pick the Chinese-made item. The Chinese consumer is quietly concerned about what they're getting. Consumers are responding to recent cases of lead paint in toys, tainted milk, and other scandals that, in some cases, led to severe penalties. As more Chinese enter the middle class,
I thought you were done. Go ahead.
No, did you want to say something?
Well, no, I was just thinking while you were talking. Remember Made in Japan back when we were kids? What did Made in Japan mean when we were kids?
It was Made in Japan.
Yeah, well, I know that, but it was kind of a cheap, chotsky type of product.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't mean anything. And now, what does Made in Japan mean now?
You tell me. This is your story. Take over.
Oh, boy. Talking about throwing somebody under the bus.
Yeah.
When you think of Made in Japan now, you think of quality. I mean, they have good cars made in Japan.
Good
cars, Japanese
right.
have turned things around to where Made in Japan went from a cheap thing to something that's quality, and they do a very good job. So that's just a side note. It has nothing to do with your story, but it made me think of that.
Can I continue?
Yeah, continue.
Chinese enter the middle class, they will increasingly look for value in the goods they buy rather than just the lowest price, which will pressure Chinese manufacturers to improve quality. But the survey still shows a potential advantage for manufacturers or retailers of consumer products who may be able to charge higher prices for goods made in the United States. The survey of more than 5,000 consumers helps support the argument that more manufacturers should base products in the United States. If you're going to have things that have a long life, like mechanics, hand tools, there's real premiums for made in the USA over a foreign brand because the quality is better, and I agree with this part. He named Stanley brand tools as an example. And also, it said here, in both the United States and China, more than 80% of those polled cite quality as a reason to pay more for U.S. goods. Baby food, household appliances, tires, car parts, and furniture are items for which most people are willing to pay a premium, generally of 10% or less. And it said shoppers in China would pay 77% more for U.S.-made athlete shoes, a status symbol. I can see that, too.
Are you done yet?
Is it my time? Am I almost
No, finished? I'm bored with this story. Go to another one.
You are? I really liked it. Are you really bored? I thought it was really good.
Oh, by the way, I actually have food news, which is kind of a promo slash, I don't know. I got to make an announcement. Emily Ellen asked me to make an announcement, and this is food news. She's in Florida on Wednesday, January 9th, and she's going to be doing a tasting and cooking demo. It's called From the Ship to the Shore, and it's being held at the Shipyard Brew Pub in Winter Park, Florida. Tickets are $30 a piece. And if you want to find out more information, you can go to shipyardwinterpark.com or emilyellen.com. That's EmilyEllyn.com. You can also find Emily Ellen on Facebook. And she had invited me to go to this, but California to Florida is a long way to go for a tasting and cooking show. So I told her I would say something about it during our food news. So if you're out in the Winter Park, Florida area, check out Emily Ellen. She's one of the contestants on the next Food Network star, and she's been on our show a couple times. And Emily's a great person, and if you're out that
she
way,
really
check it out. She really is. You can also find out more details on her website, but check it out. So that's a little promo slash food news.
Oh, good. I wish I could go, too. That's a good price.
I know, $30, and I think it starts at 6 p.m. on January the 9th, and you get the taste, and she's going to be giving cooking show part of it. I don't know if she's going to be recording it or not. If she is, we might be able to get a copy of it, play part of it on our show during the next couple weeks.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea. You know what? Whereabouts in Florida is she doing this?
Winter Park, Florida, which I think is, I'm not really sure, I think it's near Orlando.
Oh, okay.
So anybody out there in Florida, check it out.
Mm-hmm. Good for her.
Okay, got another story. We're down to like 2 minutes left before we have to go to break and our next guest.
Oh, I have I have something really good, but it's kind of long, so I won't read that. But next week I'll read the 2013 food trends. It's good. I was laughing reading it. It was beautiful. Hopefully you won't get bored. I know you get bored quickly. Sometimes when I read, you get bored, but that's okay. Here's one. Asparagus. Asparagus is a vegetable that is widely consumed worldwide and has also been used as an herbal medicine for the treatment of several diseases. Officinals is generally regarded as a supplement for the alleviation of alcohol hangover. I mean, see, I wouldn't know that. Little is known about its
effect on... You said asparagus is?
Well, this is saying officinals... I'm going to finish reading. It says it's generally regarded as a supplement for the alleviation of alcohol hangover. Little is known about its effects on cell metabolism. Therefore, this study was conducted to analyze the constituents of the young shoots and the leaves of asparagus and to compare their biochemical properties. Here's just the last line. Moreover, the results of this study indicate that portions of asparagus that are typically discarded, such as the leaves, have therapeutic use.
Interesting. It also makes your pee stink. And speaking of pee, it's time to take a break. We've got our next guest coming up. So, Laurie, this is where you can take a break while we play our little musical interlude. Our next guest is David Mahler, and he's Chef of the Jungle. And he's coming on to talk about his book and a little bit about his experience. And it should be very interesting to find out about the chef of the jungle. I was trying to find some kind of jungle music to go along with our little interlude before our next guest, but I can't find anything. So I'm going to play Norwegian Wood, which has kind of got a jungly sound if you think about it. It's an old song, but Aaron English, one of our guests from way back when, came on, and this is Aaron English, and the song is Norwegian Wood, which kind of sounds like a jungle, sort of, and we'll be back in a few minutes to talk to our next guest, David Mahler, Chef of the Jungle. If I hit the button, we will. Let's see. Go. Aaron English, Norwegian Wood. We are back for our next guest, and jungly, didn't it?
No. not liking that one. No, you didn't like my article on the U.S. Made in the U.S. I don't like that poll.
All right. Well, that's as close as I could come. All right. We're going to bring on our next guest, which is David Mahler, and it's either Mahler or Mahler. I don't know if I'm saying it wrong, and I probably am saying it wrong. But, David, if everything's working right, you should be here with us this morning. Welcome.
I am here. I can hear you guys just fine.
Great.
Yay,
good morning, David.
Good morning, and it is Mahler.
Mahler,
and
okay.
I got to agree with Lori, that may not be my favorite version of Norwegian wood.
Yay! Thank you.
And my friend, when I told him I was the chef of the jungle, used to sing the George of the Jungle theme song from the cartoon show, so, you know, I'm not sure if that's much better either.
Well, you know what? That's so funny because I was trying to find George of the Jungle on YouTube so I could download it onto the show, and as you know, we've been having technical difficulties up the wazoo this past week.
Yeah, you said I hope you got everything worked out okay.
Yeah, well, we're running. Everything seems to be working, so we're live. But unfortunately,
wonderful.
I couldn't do what I wanted to do. But, yeah, when I hear your name, Chef of the Jungle, that is the first thing I think of is George of the Jungle.
I get that a lot, so it's something I've learned to live with.
So how did you become Chef of the Jungle?
Well, I was living in the San Francisco area, and I moved to Costa Rica and started working at the edge of the rainforest, living in the jungle and working at a resort that was right on the edge of the South Pacific coast. And in Costa Rica, a lot of the coastline, the jungle and the rainforest grow right up to the edge of the coastline. And I just thought that Chef of the Jungle had a nice ring to it. The restaurant, La Cusinga, it's a small resort in an eco-lodge. Is perched on a cliff and it looks out over the ocean, but the jungle literally grows right into the back door of the kitchen.
Well, first thing I'm going to ask a question, and then it'll be your turn, Laurie. What is an eco lodge?
An eco lodge is it's becoming a more and more popular style of resort that practices sustainability, essentially.
Okay.
The place did recycled everything, recycled all of its wastewater, participated in in order to qualify for an eco lodge, there are a number of actually international specifications. And one of the things you have to do is work within the community. You have to practice sustainability in terms of the products that you use in the property. And when I went down there, the food part of the operation was not quite doing that, and it was my goal and my mission to sort of bring it up to that standard.
Well, you probably didn't hear our first section of our show, but you probably like the idea of reusable cups at Starbucks then, right?
Well, I'm not we won't go there. I'm not a Starbucks supporter, so there's a bumper strip that speaks to that.
Oh, okay. Laurie, I'm sorry I interrupted you. You had a question?
Oh, no. I'm sorry, too. We were kind of talking at the same time. No, I had a chance to peek at your blog, and I have to say, I mean, I didn't read everything. I just, you know, glanced at it briefly, but it's very nice. And I also noticed that you were standing, it looked like you were standing over the edge of a balcony, and were you fishing? Or was that a joke?
The lodge sits on sort of several levels. It tiers down toward the ocean. And so as the guests come in, they drive down a road, or they get off a main road, which runs down. There's a coastal road in Costa Rica that runs nearly the length of the country called the Costanera. And it runs along the Pacific Ocean and affords people just amazing, phenomenal views. La Cusinga, where I worked, is you take a little dirt road and you climb through all these rutted, you go through the jungle and it's rutted and twisty and windy and turny. And when it's raining, it's particularly difficult to navigate. And you get out, and the lodge sits perched out over the edge of the ocean. And as you walk out, what I was standing on and what you saw me there, Lori, was on a viewing deck. And it looks out over the ocean, and our guests would come in and sit and watch the sun go down there.
Unbelievable. What a life. What an experience.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Let me mention your food blog, too, since we weren't able to put the links on the show this morning. And by the way, David, what I'll do is, after the show and everyone listening, I'm going to post on Facebook all these links that we're talking about on the show. But if you want to check out David's food blog, it's www.chefofthejungle.blogspot.com. and you can check out what Laurie's talking about and see the blog. And it's a very interesting blog, by the way, David. And
he's very handsome too. I must interrupt and say yes, girls, when you go to look at it, he's very handsome. You actually look like my friend Brian Fairchild.
Take that as a compliment, Laurie. Now, I don't know Brian personally, but I can only take your recommendation.
He's very handsome. But it's a good dog. I couldn't believe you had a photo of the dog bite. Ugh. Ouch.
It kept me out of work for a month. I had to do something about it. You know, it was a.
Wow.
Yeah, I got trumped by about
120
pound Rottweiler.
You made this book called Cooking at La Casa Cusinga.
La Cusinga, yes, sir.
La Cusinga with Chef of the Jungle, and it's a self-published book that people can buy either through Amazon or they can contact you directly. And tell us a little bit about the actual book itself and what's in the book.
Well, the book came about because I had so many guests coming up to me saying, oh, my God, the food here is so wonderful. You must have a cookbook. You must have something for sale in the gift shop at the lodge. And I said, I would keep saying, sadly, no. And I kept providing them with recipes. I'd handwrite them and, you know, scribble them on the back of a piece of paper or something. Or if they, you know, if they wanted, I'd type it out for them and email it to them. And so finally I went to my the owner of the lodge and I said, well, you know, we really should have a cookbook. And he said, well, fine. I said, well, I'll write it. And he said, great, I'll publish it. Well, unfortunately, that didn't quite come to fruition the way it should have. And I ended up back here in the United States with a finished cookbook and no job. With the urging of my fiance, who gave me a good swift kick in the pants about it after I moaned and groaned a little while, started putting the book back together. And with the help of my sister, who is who works in editing and indexing, she did the editing for me. I'm a reasonably good writer. I was a journalism major at UC Berkeley, I did the writing, and then she did the editing, and her husband, who's very very good at graphics and layout, did all the laying out of the photographs. All the photographs were mine. They were taken on the fly. I mean, those are the pictures that are in the book are actually plates that people ate. I wasn't my own food stylist or creating food porn or anything. I was just, I'd go, that one looks good. I'll take a picture of it. And I culled through all my food photographs to choose the pictures that I liked. And basically the recipes are recipes that our guests ask for most frequently.
Well, you had mentioned to me in a note you sent to me in an email about self-publishing, and I thought that might be kind of a little bit of a brief, you know, give a little brief story about that, the woes of self-publishing. But it's a tough road to hoe.
I mean, it's a full-time job. From the moment that you undertake it, and I went in as a complete novice. I just figured, oh yeah, well sure, you just go online, and there's a bunch of things that help you do it. It is, it's not the walk in the park that people think it's going to be. You know, oh gosh, yeah, I could write a cookbook. I'm a great cook. Well, you know, anybody, you know, it's one thing to come up with a number of recipes. The hoops that you need to jump through are myriad. And it's, it is a long process, and it's a frustrating process. I think ultimately what happens is, you know, you get, I sent the book to a number of publishers, and, you know, I got it back with, you know, either no comments or one guy said, nobody cares about Costa Rica. Which I thought was amazing, since it's sort of the darling of the tourist set.
Right.
So anyway, you know, all these people coming back, I was in Costa Rica, it was beautiful. It's not particularly well known for its food, however. In any case, I did the whole thing, and I figured out how to get an ISBN number, and I figured out, how to get a barcode, and I figured out all these other things. And then I started dealing with printers and publishers, and I understood. I learned a great deal about how to do the layout, all of those sort of things. And that part was, it was very educational. I think without the help of my sister and brother-in-law, I would never have made it. But it finally did come about. And then getting on Amazon and Google, it's also for sale on Google as an ebook, was really an obscure process. They don't make it easy on you.
Oh, really?
And just if I can put a plug in, because it sounds like you guys are this kind of show, if people want to buy the book, I'd prefer you buy it from me, because the version you get from Amazon is done by a laser printer, and it's really an inferior version. They just don't allow it for self-publishing. They don't really take the care. I'm having my own copies printed by a really small local printer that uses an old-style printing, and the colors are just much more vivid and much more beautiful. And the way Amazon does it, I couldn't even include a back cover, which I thought was very strange.
That's weird. So
Why don't they allow you? I've been a self-publisher for 20 years.
You can do it, but you have to have a special. I mean, you have to have some sort of computer guru who can help you to put both your front and back cover on the same file that you send to them. And my brother-in-law, who did all this work for me, worked over this for 2 or 3 days using the instructions they gave him, and couldn't. And we just couldn't. We couldn't make it work. And they didn't care. And so that's sort of what it comes down to, is they do so much of this that they don't really care.
Yeah.
And in the long run, you know, I get $1.30 each time I sell a copy from Google and through Amazon, and I get $20 when I sell it myself. So that's probably
well. All. Then let's see. Let's do the math. Everybody buy your book directly from David.
Exactly.
And if you buy it directly from me, it's a numbered copy and hand signed and inscribed to whomever you would like.
Now, if people want to buy your book, David, too, they can find that information on your website, your blog.
Information's on my blog. Yeah. Okay. Just, you know, I'm taking either personal checks, or I'm also on PayPal, and my email address, simple enough, is chefofthejungle@yahoo.com.
Okay.
Oh, that's good.
And everybody check out his book and buy it direct from him. Now, you have any more plans for any more books up your sleeve?
I'll tell you what, right now I'd kind of like to get this one. So I'm still working on this. It's only been out about 4.5 months now.
Oh, okay.
And as I said, I'm discovering that the promotion of it, because I am doing this all myself, has become a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still, you know, I think it's a very viable book. I think it's a beautiful book. And I'm still working full-time on this right now. I have a number of recipes. I've moved to the Pacific Northwest. I'm living in the Willamette Valley in Oregon, and have set up a whole another set of recipes. In fact, I've shifted the title of my blog to / Chef of the North Woods, along with Chef of the Jungle. And I'm putting
together
a lot of recipes using local produce here. And so I would imagine the next book would be focused on cooking out with the cuisine here from the Willamette Valley, which is also
large. I don't know if you approached the libraries. Have you approached, like, your local libraries? They love local authors. So, I mean, if you want to go to some of your libraries in the area, I guarantee that they will buy your book from you.
It's funny you would mention that. I did go to the Silverton Public Library, which is the closest town that we live to, and I did a presentation there, a slideshow, and a talk to their writers group, and I did sell a number of copies to the people who came to the talk.
Yep.
And there is,
right.
Libraries are a wonderful venue for doing that.
They really are, and they help you so much. If you have any questions, I mean, they're just there to help you, and I love librarians.
The people at our local library were absolutely wonderful, very, very helpful.
Aren't
and,
they?
Yeah, libraries are good. People have forgotten how great libraries are.
That's the truth. Yep.
I used to get kicked out of my libraries because I
That's probably
talked
because
too
you
much.
Talk loud.
Yeah,
Laurie's been in
publishing for many years, and she's familiar with some of the process, and it's not fun, huh, Laurie?
No, he's right. It's a lot of legwork. I hustled. I mean, I was very lucky because, I don't know, I guess people like me. When I would go to, like, the different food stores and ask them if they would, you know, sell my book through me. I was a private vendor, and it was tough, you know, because they don't want all that paperwork. They just want to have you go to the big guys,
sure.
As you know. But yeah, it's just a lot of legwork, and if you hustle and you stick to what you say you're going to do, you'll get into a lot of places.
Well, I've been very fortunate using Facebook and creating a page for the book on Facebook. There's a chef there's a page on Facebook called Cooking at La Cucinga, which also has all the information about buying the book.
Oh, I'll like it. Cooking, cool. I'll have to like your page.
Yeah, so there's a whole page right there. If you'd like it, that would be wonderful. And I post on it. I post pictures from my adventures in Costa Rica on it. I change it usually a couple times a week. I continually am hustling and pimping the book on the page. And there's also a lot of really, really nice reviews and comments from people who have bought the book, because I've gotten nothing but wonderful feedback from people who have been kind enough to buy it.
Yeah, well, they appreciate your hard work, like you said.
You've been a lifetime chef, and you actually were cooking in San Francisco prior to going to Costa Rica from 1990 to 2005. Where were you a chef? You were at, hotels?
Small hotels. I worked mostly a long period of time at a couple of different New Orleans-style restaurants. One was called the Elite Cafe, which is still there. It was the first New Orleans venue for food in San Francisco. It opened in 1981. And then I broke away from there and opened my own place called Bel Rue, both of which were reviewed very, very well. I had been working, I'd worked all over the United States, essentially. I'm from the Bay Area. I grew up near close to Berkeley. I went to UC Berkeley. I worked in the Berkeley food scene in the late 70s, early 80s with Mark Miller and a number of alums from the Chez Panisse restaurant. I worked at the Santa Fe Bar and Grill and helped open that. And from there, I started traveling, and I lived in Boston. I lived briefly in Manhattan. I lived in Venice Beach and Santa Monica and Los Angeles. And I've when I was younger, I used my skills to travel.
Good for you.
So give us a little sneak preview. What is some of your favorite, a couple of your favorite recipes that are in the book?
I'm getting a lot of feedback. There's a really wonderful, I discovered years ago that you could make off-season tomatoes taste good by roasting them. And so I roast them on a sheet pan with olive oil and sliced onions and whole garlic cloves. And I roast them until I get a nice caramelized color on them. And then I use that as a medium for all kinds of different sauces. And I happen to be a big fan of chicken legs as opposed to chicken breasts. So there's a recipe in there for braised chicken legs using these roasted tomatoes. And then I add a little, you can add all sorts of little, you can put basil in it or a little bit of squeeze of lemon juice, or capers are nice in it. There's also a tropical glaze there called a salsa de la jungla that I invented. I wanted sort of an all-purpose jungle sauce, if you will, that's based on mango and ginger and habanero chilies with citrus, and it comes out almost the consistency and texture of a barbecue sauce. But it's a wonderful glaze on anything from chicken to pork to roasted squash. I used to put it on vegetarian dishes.
Well, if everybody
great salsa recipes, and the desserts are to die for. I had people who were huge fans of my desserts, and I've probably written more copies of the recipe for something I call Not Your Mother's Pineapple Upside Down Cake than any other recipe that I've come up with.
Well, everybody who's listening, make sure you check out your website, which is www.chefofthejungle.blogspot.com. You said it was a slash chef with the Northwood.
Well, that's added on there. There's no change in the address.
Okay. And you can check out all of David's information there. Also find out more about his book. You can also find David on Facebook. And we appreciate you taking time to come on our show to tell us a little bit about your book and your experience going through the book publishing process, and wish you much success, and keep us posted on how things develop along the way as you push this book out there.
Well, I sure appreciate your having me on the show, and it's been great talking with you guys, and
I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, and remind people they can go to my Facebook page for the book called Cooking at La Cucinga.
Great.
So thanks, you guys. I sure appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. Everybody check out David's information and go to his various Facebook pages and buy his book. It sounds very interesting, and that food he's talking about, Laurie, it actually sounds excellent.
I know, it sounds really good, and I'm glad he has a like page, because as people know, I've mentioned before, I can't add anymore on my regular page. I'm blocked from doing that with too many, but I can still like pages from Facebook on my business page, so I can't wait to check that page out. He's really a sweetheart. He sounds so nice.
Yes, and the reason why you can't any more friends, you're just too popular. That's the problem.
Oh, yes, sir. No. Just the business. Yeah. Just the food world. A lot of chefs out there.
So everybody, check out David's information. Go to the Chef of the Jungle and buy his book. That's what we're here for, to help people promote their products. Yep. And by the way, speaking of that, if you've got a product or a book or food, anything that has to do with food, let us know. We'd like to have you on the show, or if you know somebody who wants to come on and promote the show or talk about what they do, please have them give me a call or email me. And also, if you're in the music business, and I'm stalling for time, I don't know if you can tell that I'm talking very slow. I'm trying to get the music files up here for our next guest. But if you're a music music talent and you want to be on the show, we're always looking for people to come on the show to sing their songs and show off their talents, and we're always looking for new people out there. And Laurie, while I'm trying to get this thing to work, I'm going to have to put a little bit of pressure on you. Do you have another food news story you can give us for the next minutes while I try to figure this out?
Sure. How much longer? 10 minutes?
We got about 6 minutes.
Oh, I have. Yeah, I'll read the 2013 food trends. How's that?
All right, do that. Do that while I'm over here trying to get this thing to work.
Okay, you go, and I'll read.
Okay.
Okay, it says, what's the buzz? The healthful green kale was one of the biggest trends of 2012, and what will take its place? In 2013, it's the year of the snake, according to Chinese lunar calendar. But in food circles, it just might be the year of the roast chicken or Asian noodles. Molecular gastronomy, fancy cupcakes, Korean tacos. The new year is always the time when prognosticators of all strip, decide what's in, what's out, and most intriguing of all, what's next.
Wait a minute, go back for a second. Did you say Korean tacos?
Yeah.
What the heck is a Korean taco?
Korean food in taco.
I know, but, oh, wow. Okay.
I have to be honest with you. I didn't know it either. I mean, molecular gastronomy, of course, fancy cupcakes. I mean, that's, you know, I don't think that'll ever go out. That's here to stay, those fancy cupcakes. But, yeah, the Korean tacos kind of threw me for a loop, so.
I bet you in North and South Korea, you don't find Korean taco stands.
I'm sure you don't. I didn't realize you were still on the phone. I thought you had me on mute because you were trying to fix your screen. So I was gonna make a joke about the kale that was the biggest thing in 2012 because remember I always teased you about that.
Yes, kale is good for you. I've actually had some kale since we had that show where you talked about kale, and it's actually not bad if you throw enough pork in there.
No. A little olive oil, garlic, you'll be fine. It's like spinach.
Yeah. Throw some fat back and bacon in there, then it's really good.
Oh, Lizzie would love that one. Yeah.
So,
her bacon.
So are you done with your friend story? Because I'm still trying to get our system to work.
No. I just started the article. Ready? Will we eat more Asian-influenced sandwiches and less Asian food? More Latin American flair with a focus on Peru and Brazil? What influence will the economy, the growing number of farmers' markets, and our time-crunched lives have on what we eat? It says, we are always looking for things that we already know, says Harry Blitt Bowser, who has been watching what Americans eat for more than 30 years as a senior analyst with NPD market researchers. We're explorers, but we're not Christopher Columbus. We are the things that could have the greatest impact. They're in the things that we eat the most. Vegetables and fruits, see, and sandwiches.
Yeah.
Here's their focus based on the buzz among what they're talking about. Heirloom chicken. Do you know about that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's like the turkeys, right?
No, that's exactly the next line. It's like heirloom turkeys and heritage pigs before it. Now may be chicken's turn to get attention. So now the chicken
it's the wild chicken.
We'll begin calling chicken by the varieties and maybe begin noticing the difference in flavors, says Clark Wolf. He's a restaurant consultant and he's a trend spotter. So in fact, senior food editor at Nation's Restaurant News said it's here, pointing to an emerging class of high quality, fast casual restaurants like Bantam and Biddy in Atlanta that celebrate heritage chicken.
My great grandmother used to call them yard birds.
Really?
Yeah, because wild chickens ran around in her yard, and she would go out there and catch them and kill them. So she was a trendsetter back in the 1960s.
She was. See, you really are a Southern boy. I'll tell you.
Have you ever seen that? By the way, have you ever seen anybody catch a chicken, wring their neck?
Really? Now, me, of course, I wouldn't look at that. I can't even watch boxing and football. I'm going to watch that?
Well, I was in the chicken processing business for 5 years, and, of course, it was all done a little bit different than my great-grandmother used to do it. But, yeah, I can remember as a kid seeing her go out and catch a chicken, and I won't get into the gory details, but there's a hatchet involved and a lot of squawking.
Brilliant. Please. I know how you're dying to talk about this. You're going to call me up later and try to fill me in, and I'll be screaming. I don't want to hear it. You have to tell me.
Yep.
Right?
Well, great-grandma, great-grandma didn't know she was a trendsetter.
Well, anyway, it says that the vegetables will continue to move to the center of the plate, catering to the vegetarians, the vegans, the flexitarians. Do you know what a flexitarian is?
Well, I was going to say, what the heck is that?
I had to look it up in case you quizzed me on it. It says they're a semi-vegetarian. They eat less meat than others.
Oh, boy.
They make these words up. I know. It's also...
What do you call it again? Wait a minute. A flex of what?
A flexitarian. I Googled it. The definition. It means semi-vegetarian and you eat less meat than others.
You know, I played Twister one time and I was a flexitarian.
I bet you were.
Anyway, oh my God, that's a new one for me. I've actually got the system working. Are you almost done with your story?
No, I have a lot more to go, but I'll continue it for next week.
All right, why don't you continue it next week? Why don't you be a flexitarian and be flexible, and we'll finish that story next week.
I am. I just go.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to play this music. Our next guest is Jim Anderson, and Jim was on our show actually a year ago, almost to the day. Jim Anderson, all I can say is when you say Jim Anderson, you think of Elvis. Jim is a great guy who sings Elvis songs, and you just got to hear his music to understand. It's called Jim Anderson and the Rebels, and Jim will be joining us here in a couple of minutes, and Jim has some new music, but unfortunately, like I mentioned earlier, we've had some technical difficulties this past week, so I was unable to load some of Jim's new music on, but we'll be having him on next. I'm going to play a song that Jim had sent to us last year, and everybody will recognize this famous song of Elvis. It's called Falling in Love with You. And after the song, we'll be right back to talk about Jim, see what's been going on the past year with him and what his future plans are. So everybody hang tight. This is Jim Anderson, Falling in Love with You.
This song is called Falling in Love with You by Elvis Presley.
everything right. I should have Jim on the phone with us. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, sir. How you doing?
All right. Welcome back to the show. We appreciate you coming back on. And the reason why it's so important on January 5th for you to be on our show, because those people who may not know, January 8th was Elvis's birthday. And you have a big birthday bash going on up at the Firehouse Arts Theater in Northern California. So I just want to make sure we had you back on, since it's a perfect time to have you back on just before Elvis's birthday. Thank you again.
Oh, no, thank you very, very much. I'm glad to see it, you know, the success of your show. It's real fun. I always catch in and listen in while I'm, you know, doing stuff in the studio and stuff. And I like listening to everything. Got a lot of good stuff. And every time I'm done, I got to go try to figure out how to make what's on your show right afterwards.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, you sing beautifully, and I love that song that Grillion had picked to play. You have a beautiful voice.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. How's your
Well, Jim, I say mine over here is clear blue, sunny skies, but it was cold. When I was telling in the early part of the show, it's so cold that the water in the bird bath was frozen, so that's cold for San Diego.
We got nothing but a bunch of fog up here.
I wanted to have you on the show, and before we get into a little bit about your concert that's coming up tonight, I guess that's tonight, right? Tonight, and more about what you're doing in the future. For those who may not be familiar with you, and we discussed it about a year ago, but can you kind of give a little brief bio about yourself and how you got into singing, kind of a recap of how you got into singing and all this thing?
Yes, sir. Well, when I was younger, when I was in high school, some football buddies of mine talked me into going into a variety show at the local high school up on the big auditorium and stage and all that. And then, so I did, and I sang "Love Me Tender," and people kind of went kind of a little nutty and stuff. So I thought that was interesting. And then after that, I got booked for a bunch of small stuff, and things got a little bigger and bigger, and I ended up just blessed and lucky and fortunate. I ended up opening up for Doug Kershaw, the Coasters, the Marvelettes, and Del Vikings, and Isley Brothers, and I was just beside myself, you know, seeing all the folks and everything. I met my beautiful wife, Michelle, who's tolerated me for 22 years now. We've been married 20 years, and I knew that at that point we for security and retirement, I went into law enforcement. I've been in law enforcement a long, long time, done all kind of things, detectives and investigators and patrol and training officer. And then I got injured. I got hurt pretty bad, and went through several surgeries and a couple pulmonary embolisms and medically retired. And then when I told my wife, I said, "Wow, I can't believe I'm retired." She just kind of giggled and smiled and said, "No, sweetheart, you need to find something to do." So I said, "Well, I think I'm going to give it a shot to sing." And she thought that was great. She's so supportive. She's a beautiful, beautiful young lady. So I started singing again, about last year when I was on your show, and I'll be darned if it didn't go really, really, really well for some reason. And like I said, I feel humbled and blessed, and it's a great show, and we're having a good time, and we're, good Lord, we were so busy last year, it was incredible, and then this year looks like we might even be twice as busy, we're going to see if we can't, go nationally and internationally and everything this year. And then of course, we want to get into some original music also. So we already have the music and songs. We just kind of got so busy last year that we didn't have an opportunity to do any recording. We're going to do recording. And every time we turn around, we're put on another stage somewhere. So we want to do that, and that style of music, I guess, would be I'm not even sure. It's the music that I like is kind of a I could describe it as a rockabilly, boogie woogie, country blues style of music. So we've got a little bit of everything in it, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be, and it's a heck of a show, and it's going to be a great time. I'm looking forward to tonight. It's our first show of the year, and last year we sold out. They booked us a headline. The one night that I was on your show last year.
Right.
That's probably my luck up to you, since you're the one I was on your show. I probably got sold out after that.
So now you can owe all your success to Green Ideas Radio. Now there's a first.
I like it. And you know, now and now this year, I was told this is the city of Pleasanton. Is sponsoring a show, and SS Productions, ESSES Productions, Stephen Shore and Samantha Samuels, they're the production company sponsoring this, and they are, I tell you, if you want to have some great folks on your show, they are some magnificent folks. So now this year they said, well, you sold out in record time last year, so let's see if we could book you back to back for 2 days this year, and I was like, I guess we're pretty close to selling out both days already, and I'm like,
oh, good for you.
Good for us, but I figure this, 90 minutes, I can get out there and let everybody forget about if they're having any troubles at home, and they're smiling and having a good time, and they're not, you know, worried about, you know, the trilogies in their life, and I'll tell you what, that's the best feeling in the world. And afterward, I always have a meet and greet, no matter where we're at, and
right.
Just sit around and talk to folks and hang out and let them know that I'm just a normal human being, and they're just as more important than I am. So, and we have a great time, and like I say, Estes Productions, they are just an absolutely phenomenal company. And they bring, they do all kind of stuff, children's cabaret, and they promote, big shows. And I'll tell you, it's a great thing. And of course, there's other great company that I know about. I don't know if you've heard of them, called the Grillion Ideas. Well, I'll tell you.
I heard of them.
Yeah, heard of them? All right.
Well, Jim, I want to mention your website, too, because since we had problems with our show this past week and getting things loaded, I want to make sure everybody who's listening, you can check out, Jim's got a website, which is www.jimandersonandtherebels.com. Also, he's got a YouTube website, which is www.youtube.com/JimAndersonMusic. Is it 2011? Is that right, Jim?
Yes, sir. 2011. That's kind of, I put that last set of numbers there because that's kind of always our reminder. We started at the late end of kind of pulling a bunch of gentlemen together at the end of 2011. And these cats that I got working for me now, I'm telling you, I'm the luckiest man. I got this is knockout wife. I've got beautiful boys. I got two granddaughters that are. I got one of them standing outside the studio door, just itching to say hello. And she's and so we. But I got these guys in the band. Frank Masucci, he's a lead guitar player. He played in a band that, opened up for the Doors. These guys are Fingers Farnsworth. He's played and recorded with a lot of major A-star folks, Greg Landry, our drummer out of Chicago, he's opened up for like Martina McBride. And then this youngest kid we got is in his 20s. And you're thinking, oh, well, I've got all these guys who are, I'll just say seasoned like a fine wine. And then this kid comes in, Mickey Yamo. And he is... I got to say, if I don't know if I've actually met a genius, this has got to be him. He is an audio engineer, sound engineer. He's a teacher, a certified teacher for, public schools. He runs computer systems. He plays every instrument. And then you go back to me who can strum on about 10-15 notes on a guitar, and they just look at me like I'm silly. So. A great guy.
So you got,
wonderful
guy. Got yourself a great crew backing you up, and all you're doing is just making them look good, right?
I don't. You know what? I got. It's funny because I used to. I've had a lot of folks, and I don't want to say back you up because when people say, "Oh, these guys back you up," they don't really back me up. Without them, I got to be honest. You know, I'd have to use karaoke tracks, and I don't even think that would be as good as these guys are. They really are, Fingers Farnsworth, our keyboard player, he snaps us into shape. I've never been afraid of nobody except my dad, except him. He don't play around. It's down to the note, to the octave, to the beat, and I'm sitting there going, what did you just say? You had me at hello, you know, and he does. He works us into shape. He does all the arrangements. Frank Masucci, our lead guitar player, gets in there. And he starts drawing down a lick, and then, you know, there's a lot of music that there's a lot of things that weren't available back in 1954, 55, 56, and 57 and stuff that are now today. And Frank
right.
really, really puts a rhythm, a bluesy pick guitar into the music that is just you almost darn near can't hold still. Mickey Yamo, the bass player, play into every instrument. My goal this year is to get a stand-up bass, not just to
right.
see a show, but just to see, watch him just tear it apart and go, that was great. He slaps his bass with our drummer. He teaches. It's all recorded in studios. I mean, they're just, so without them, you know, I'm not making them look good. They're making me look good. They really are. I can't even tell you enough. Those guys are phenomenal.
Well, I want to play another one of your songs, Jim, and that you sent to me last year. And did you say your granddaughter was there?
Yeah, Brooklyn's here. She's
I'm gonna play your song. If you want to bring her on, if she wants to say hello on the radio, she's welcome to come on and say hi if she wants to. I'm gonna play your song. The one's called Memories. And when we come back here, if you want to put her on the phone to say hello, that'd be great. So everybody, hang tight. We're going to play Jim Anderson and his song Memories, and we'll be back right after his music.
All right, sir. I'll see you in a second.
This song is called Memories by Elvis Presley. Whew, where's that? Thank you.
memories, and I'm trying to get somebody back on the phone here. You there, Jim?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. And that great song, Laurie, are you there with us still?
I'm here.
All right. So is your granddaughter handy?
Yes, she is. Her name is Brooklyn.
It's Brooklyn.
Oh, pretty.
Hello, how are you? Hi. What do you think of Grandpa Jim Elvis?
What do you think Papa sang?
I don't know.
Do you like it? Did you get to go see Papa's shows?
Well, I've seen one before. I need two.
You saw two?
How old is she, Jim?
She looks like it happened. And the other one really far away.
Yeah.
And Jane's one really far away at that one.
And did you have fun?
Yeah.
Papa came out and
thanked
you, huh?
Well, now, I'm another one. Oh, that's really tired.
You want to hide and tell Grandma, say, I love you, Grandma.
Love you, Grandma.
Grandma's with me, too, as well. All right, you're going to go back with Grandma right now?
Yeah.
Hey, tell him thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being on the radio. Now you can play the replay, and she can hear herself on the radio.
Yeah, that's right. You'll be able to hear yourself on the radio here in a little bit, honey. Bye-bye.
Well, Jim, we thank you very much for joining us. I wanted to mention the place you're declaring tonight at 8 o'clock, which is the Firehouse Arts Theater, and people can find out more information by going to the website, which is www.firehousearts.org, and you say there's still some tickets available?
Yes, sir. I'm not sure how many. Last checked, tonight's is about maybe 6-8 tickets left, and tomorrow I think there's only about 20 or so tickets left. So if folks like there's a lot of Elvis fans out there, and by all means, I'm one of them, and I know a lot of folks, and I've met a lot of folks. We got about 4,500 followers on Facebook right now, but I'm up here out of Manteca, California. That's where I lived and where I was raised, and there's a lot of folks around, and it's not our show is the show is not just I'm just like Elvis music. If you like oldies music and you like a good old rock and roll concert, this is just not about Elvis. It's about a really good time. I always tell everybody, you know what, it's time to get out of your seat and onto your feet. That's what I will tell everybody. Get a little.
Well, now I got to ask a question. Now, when are you going to be headlining in Vegas?
I don't know. I love Vegas. This last year, Darlene Tompkins came up. Darlene Tompkins was Elvis's female co-star in Blue Hawaii, and I did a little morning TV show interview with her, and we were on TV and stuff. And then I brought my guitar player Frank Masucci, and we actually the song Elvis sang in Blue Hawaii, the famous song. One of them obviously
right.
was Falling in Love with You. So I had,
right.
And we didn't tell her. We surprised her and we sang Falling in Love with You, and she enjoyed it. And then I headlined a concert that weekend, and during the, and then I, on a Friday, and then Saturday I was at the American Graffiti, that they have the big one over there in Modesto,
right
here, and was on stage there, and she was there, and I got to hang out with her and talk to her. And then Judy Richard, who's just a top Elvis Presley fan club president out of Vegas, was there, and I got to meet a lot of nice folks. And I don't know, I'd like to go everywhere. I found Elvis's old tour schedule from like 1954, 55, 56, and 57. 54 is 19, and that's when he started out. And
right.
It was just a bunch of small little places strewn all over, Tennessee and Texas and all kinds of places. I'd love to be able to have a, one of them big old trucks and trailers where the stage comes out the side. Just he'll park it in the parking lot of every spot he played and just rock and roll. Let everybody make it clean.
Now that would be cool. That'd be cool to take the actual tour that he made and follow the tour and show up at all the different places where Elvis went.
Yeah, and you know what? And it'd be great to have a sponsor that we could just do it all free, so nobody had to pay anything, and everybody could just come scream their heads off. And like I tell them now, I'll tear the stage up, you tear the stands up.
Well, Jim, I wish you much success and tomorrow in the concert. It sounds like you've got pretty much a sold-out crowd, and we thank you for taking time to be on our show again. And keep going at it. It sounds like it's going good for you, and keep Green Ideas Radio in mind when you turn out big. We just want a few tickets on the front row, okay?
Front
row's
not close enough. It goes anywhere real big. You'll be backstage hanging out and just relaxing. If I could, I'd like to tell, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell, last time I didn't get a chance, I want to tell all my boys, Josh, who just went down to college in Santa Cruz, and Storms in high school here locally in Manteca, and Parsons in seventh grade. I'd like to tell all them I love them. I'd like to tell my granddaughters, Ashley in Brooklyn, my mom and dad, and my mother-in-law and father-in-law, who are just the most amazing folks in the world. Tell them all hello and tell them that I love them. And I'd like to tell my wife of 20 years, Michelle, I love you so much. You're the absolute bomb. And if you all get on my website and or my Facebook, which is, www.facebook.com/JimAnderson.country.music, you'll see pictures of my wife and go, what is this hot-looking gal doing with this dude? She's a beautiful lady, and she looks all the better part of like 28 years old. And anyway, last but not least, my son Brandon, we lost him about a year and a half ago, and you and I talked about it before, but
right.
You know what? He's a hell of a kid. A heck of a kid. Excuse me. And we got his granddaughters in there. They're tormenting the heck out of me every day, I tell you. But I love it, and I'll tell you, you folks are great, and I wish you the utmost success because you truly believe it. Remember, don't forget that email. Don't forget what I told you in that email I sent you.
Yeah, I remember.
You remember when a big old truck from Best Buy or Intel or somewhere comes backing up your driveway, just know, okay?
All right, I appreciate it. Well, thank you, Jim. I'm going to let you go, and you're welcome to come back at any time, and keep us posted on as things develop there with your career. And we appreciate you taking the time again. And I'm going to play as a closing song, which, Laura, you need to listen to the words of this song, the old song, Treat Me Nice. Make sure you treat me nice, Laurie, because you're always picking on me. But, Jim, we appreciate it, and have a good 2013.
You also. And, Laura, you just keep on picking on them, okay? Got to keep them in mind.
Okay, I will.
Take care, young lady.
You
and
great
I'll
job.
Folks, due time. I'm going to stick a link to your show on my website so everybody can start picking on and listening, okay?
All right. Well, thanks, Jim. You take care.
Take care.
God bless.
Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye. And everybody, we're going to sign off with the Jim song, Treat Me Nice, and everyone have a nice weekend, and we thank all of our guests today. And I'm going to say goodbye. Laura, you can say goodbye, and I'm going to play the song.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
I'm a really gonna breathe. don't want you to be the desire.
Treat me nice.
Hey, Mr. Pingalapo, hey, Mr. Willie K. Scratch my back and run your brain again. Hey, my head, hey, so you know I'll be slow.
Hey, baby,
think that you're passing me too.
Hey,
but if you don't behave,
hey,
I can walk right out on you.
Hey,
if you want my love, then say bye-bye.
Treat me nice.
Welcome to the people I hold. Hey, baby, so you're the king. Scratch my back and run your brain and then bring my head to him. But you know I think he's
saying
if you're asking me to. But if you don't behave, I'll walk the line out on you. If you want my love to take my love.
Treat me nice.
Treat me nice, treat me nice, treat me nice.
Treat me nice.
Treat me nice, treat me nice.
If you really want my love, treat me nice.